Dad's on the air. We're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're Dad's on the air. We're Dad's on the air.
Good morning and welcome to Dad's on the Air for Tuesday, the 2nd of October 2007. And we've got a slightly depleted Dad's on the Air this morning. In fact, I'm the only one here. So it's basically going to be the Ian Show, author of the Daddy Split Guide, running the program for you this morning. And I'll have Greg and Drayson will be phoning in later on this morning to talk from the Men and Family Relationships Conference that's happening in Adelaide at the moment. He's attending that and will be interviewing all of the relevant people down there and bringing all that back for Dad's on the Air for future shows. So good morning, everybody. I'm sorry to say you've only got me this morning, but I'll be doing my best, I promise you that. Okay, well, in this morning's Telegraph, there was an article on about, I'll read that article to you now because it's very relevant. The generally poor health and well-being of men poses a major threat to the economy, a leading academic says. Professor Gary Whithert, head of the University of Adelaide School of Medicine, said recent studies had revealed an alarming picture of men's health. Obesity, diabetes, cardiovascular disease, depression, insomnia, and erection were all problems, he said. Combined with an aging population, poor health and well-being pose a major threat to productivity and economic growth as a state and nation, he said. So there you have it. I'm amazed that they consider erectile dysfunction to be something that we should consider as seriously as obesity, diabetes and cardiovascular disease. Erectile dysfunction, as far as I was concerned, was something that they dreamed up to flog their new drug Viagra. I didn't actually realize that it had any serious consequences that went back into the community. Erectile dysfunction, I think we all have that at certain stages of our lives. I just personally believe that's something that the drug companies have dreamed up so that they can flog their latest product at us. Okay, well, the world in terms of fatherhood is a not much of a saner place this week than it was last week. We've also got Shane Warne's ex-wife Simone in the paper, accusing him of being a bully and various other things, and of course a liar and a bully. And of course the tabloids are paying her richly for these revelations, which all the sane people in the community are really not interested in the dirty laundry of Shane and Simone Warne. I just think it's a bit of a tragedy for their children. They have to deal with their parents making absolute fools of themselves and each other in the media, which is a travesty, and it's just not good for anybody. You know, all publicity is good publicity. Well, I don't think so. Not if you're a bowler. And I don't know what Simone thinks she's getting from all of this, but she obviously imagines there's something in it for her, and she keeps going. All right, well, Dad's on the Air this morning, because there's only me here. It's probably going to be more like Dad's on the Nose. I don't have John Stapleton here, but what I do have, which I'm going to read to you from, is an extract from my book, The Daddy's Split Guide, which, is, by the way, is available on lulu.com. So if you haven't got your copy of The Daddy's Split Guide, if you've got friends who are going through relationship problems, men specifically, but women can read it as well. It's not a completely sexist document, but it is aimed at fathers going through divorce. And I will read to you, because I've just received last week, the second edition has been released of the Daddy Split Guide, and with a foreword from John Stapleton, our very own John Stapleton, who normally graces the airwaves with his presence, but for some reason today he's decided, well, he's injured actually. I've seen his injury. He's got a sore thumb, so we have to let John off. And Peter van der Voort, of course, is overseas in Europe. He's conducting interviews all over the place for Dad's on the Air, and he'll be coming back with a huge cache of information and interviews with various people from the fatherhood movement in Europe, and that will be happening over the next month or so. And of course, Greg and Drayson, who I mentioned earlier, is at a Men and Family Relationships Conference in Adelaide, and he'll be phoning in later on. So that leaves just me here on the job. So like I say, it's Dad's on the Nose, not Dad's on the Air this morning. You've got to put up with me. Now, I'm reading from the foreword of the Daddy Split Guide. This was written by our very own John Stapleton, and he writes, "Most separated men, faced with the collapse of their known universe, retreat like wounded animals into caves of their own making. Most of these men lose virtually everything in their life, not just their marriage, but often their house, their income, their social standing, their friendships, and worst of all, any meaningful relationship with their children. They also lose complete faith in their country and their fellow citizens, in their national identity and everything they have ever held dear. For as loyal, upright citizens of Australia, most men have got up and gone to work each day, day after day, putting one forward in front of the other, paying their bills and grumbling perhaps about useless politicians. But they have at least derived some comfort from the belief that while they paid the exorbitant taxes characteristic of this country, at least it was a country which believed in social justice and the fair go, a country they could be proud of. No one who has been through the travesty of justice, decency and honesty, that is the family court of Australia, and experienced the bureaucratic insanities of the Child Support Agency or the anti-male, anti-father bias of Legal Aid or Centrelink could possibly have any respect for our legal system or the politicians who have allowed these social disasters to continue on their destructive paths with such impunity." And I quote, that's John Stapleton from the Daddy Split Guide, which, as I've said, is available via lulu.com. All right, people who've been listening to the program all morning this morning are probably sick and tired of listening to me, so I'm going to play something else right now. This is, well, you'll know what this is when you hear it.
Start again.
Thanks, Billy. A nice day to start again. A nice day for a white wedding. And if you've already been through a white wedding and it didn't quite turn out how you imagined it would be, that song will hold a bit of extra meaning for you. Okay, now I'm going to read from the Daddy Split Guide again because I think this reading definitely needs to take place. This is from the last chapter, and I will quote from now on. As Warren Farrell, PhD, put it during a Dad's on the Air interview in January 2007, the war of the sexes is the only war in history where only one side showed up. Faced with the militant advance of radical feminism since the 1960s, most men have preferred to bury their heads in the sand and are in denial about the blatant denigration of our gender over the past 40 years. As previously stated, I hate statistics. I state that all the time. But it's time that some of the more relevant ones were included. Let's start with divorce. Everybody knows that more than half the marriages in the Western world end in divorce or separation. 93% of custody battles favour the mother. This means that 10% of fathers who consider that they have a good enough case to bother a court with it actually win. So 10% of the men out there who think they have a good case to get custody of their children actually lose it. Remember that a large percentage of fathers don't contest custody disputes, so the figures favour mothers far more than the 93% of court case outcomes suggests. These figures exist like a giant festering sore on the face of recent government posturing in most Western democracies. An avalanche of scientific evidence incontrovertibly proves that our children are demonstrably and measurably better off under a general presumption of equally shared parenting after separation. The policy of excluding fathers or limiting them to the daddy pack arrangement of every second weekend and half the school holidays is completely inadequate. It has become apparent that fathers make just as good solo parents as mothers. In fact, recent evidence suggests that children actually do better with a solo father than a solo mother. Now, this has to take into account a number of mitigating factors, such as the necessarily high caliber of the few men who are able to successfully argue against the current trend that favours mothers and actually gain custody of their children. These men tend to be more affluent, they tend to be more competent and socially advantaged than your common garden bloke. So they are exceptional men to start with, and the fact that they produce exceptional children, it's not that surprising. However, the ancient Neanderthal presumption, still fashionable in most family court jurisdictions on the planet, is that the children are better off living with their mother. Loving fathers across the globe are having their children thoughtlessly amputated by out-of-date, self-generating judicial systems that involve a whole range of professionals from judges and lawyers through social workers and psychologists. These people have established an industry based on false assumptions and outright injustice. They are growing fat on the misery and disadvantage of other people's children. Governments have been paying lip service of late to more enlightened approaches to family separation. Yes, well, we know the family law amendments that the Howard government put in place last year, and we have had a couple of signs, glimmers of a bit of light in the darkness. There have been some slight improvements. We had a guest on the program last week who actually had a very good outcome from a family court settlement, which is unusual, and we here at Dad's on the Air have our fingers crossed and pray to whoever we pray to daily that these changes will have some concrete and definite effect on the situation that sees most children of separated families losing one of their parents, which is an absolute travesty and a disgraceful situation. All right, well, I'll keep continuing from the guide, the Daddy Split Guide, available on lulu.com. My advice to any fathers who are considering removing themselves from the family home for whatever reason is this. And this is in large letters underlined, in large bright letters underlined so that you can't miss it. It says, make arrangements for the custody of your children before you move out. Get it in writing, signed and sealed to withstand a nuclear holocaust from unscrupulous lawyers. So the
the bottom line advice there is, if you're thinking of leaving your wife and your family, get a deal before you move out. Make the arrangement before you go where you can sit across the table as an equal and negotiate with your ex or your soon-to-be ex-partner. You are in a far better position than you will be in after you have moved out, because suddenly then it will become apparent to you, for reasons that will be absolutely mysterious to you, that you actually have no rights and that she has all the rights. So let me just repeat that. Make arrangements for the custody of your children before you move out. Get it in writing, signed and sealed, to withstand a nuclear holocaust. And that is the best way that a father can protect his relationships with his children, which, despite the old James Bond, Marquis de Sade stereotype that goes around that fathers don't care about their children, that we just like to kind of inseminate women and run for our lives and couldn't give a stuff what happens, is just absolute garbage. That men are just as attached to their children, that the role of a father is just as serious and just as important for a growing child as the role of a mother. I'm not saying it's more important than the role of a mother. I'm saying it is just as important. And we've had these feminists for many years been telling us that fatherhood is irrelevant, that children don't need fathers. And, of course, we are living through the social consequences of this ridiculous, thoughtless, shallow attitude. We see it all the time. The number of knifings, the number of riots, all of the social dislocation, everything in our society that's falling to bits. You could even say that, well, I don't know about terrorism. I don't know if that comes from fatherlessness. Perhaps too much of an imagined father in the sky who's going to do too many favours when it's all over, perhaps. But anyway, most of the socials that we deal with here in Australia, especially in Sydney, the knifings, the youth problems, you know, the alcoholism, the drug addiction, the violence, a lot of that just comes purely and simply from the fact that fathers have been excluded from a lot of people's upbringings, and consequently they haven't been brought up properly. Okay, well, I'm now going to play another song. This is a song from Horizon Shine, which is my latest recording endeavor. I've teamed up with a guy called Smiley Burns, who's released his own album and who is a musician of great note in the Sydney situation, and we've recorded this song. This is our latest effort. This is a song called My Boy.
Every day, 'cause he's my calls me a fool. And then he turns and smiles. He's my boy, and I'm his daddy. I love him forever, love him madly. Cause he's my boy, pride and joy. Nothing can compare with holding his hand, running my fingers.
That was Horizon Shine, My Boy. A song about the love of a father for his son. I should know. I wrote it myself. I know that love. I know that feeling. Something that a lot of men are being deprived of. And, of course, their sons and their daughters. It's not just about love. The fact that I just had a son, it's not supposed to be sexist in any way. If I'd had a daughter, it'd be called My Little Girl. I assure you of that. It's got nothing to do with the sex of the recipient of the father's love, which in this case it was my love for my son. That's the song that I wrote to express it. Now I'm waiting here, hopefully we're waiting for Greg Andreessen to call us in from Adelaide. He's at a men's and relationship conference down there, and hopefully he's going to call in and report very soon. But I'm going to continue reading from the Daddy Split Guide, which is available on Lulu, LULU.com, and I recommend you all get it, because if you know people, or if you're going through a family breakup, you will need the Daddy Split Guide. You will need advice, you'll need a good laugh, you'll need information, you'll need everything that's in the guide, and I really think you should just get on the internet, go to www.lulu.com and order up the Daddy Split Guide. Okay, I'm going to read from it now. This is from the outro once again, and as I've said to you, the best advice that in this guide is that make your arrangement for the custody of your children before you move out. Okay, now I'm reading from the guide, so I quote, "While you are still a resident father, you can negotiate as an equal with your soon-to-be ex-partner. Once you move out, you will never be equal again. Involve the children in the discussion if possible. They will have a point of view and will feel a lot more secure if it is respected. I appreciate that in some cases any rational discussion might seem impossible, but believe me, it will be far more impossible for you to have your wishes considered once you have taken the plunge and moved out. As long as neither of you really is a drug addict, an alcohol or a pedophile, shared parenting is by far the best option for your children. They need and love you both. They should never be put in a situation where they have to choose between their parents and should never have to listen to one of you abusing or insulting the other. These things are not fair on them. They will carry the scars for their entire lives and will be handicapped in their ability to form and maintain meaningful, lasting relationships. You are their father. You must accept this responsibility and be strong. You will be rewarded for taking the emotional and moral high ground by being able to watch your children grow into healthy, well-adjusted adults." That is a reading from the Daddy Split Guide, written by Ian Purdy, available on lulu.com. Okay, well, one of the regular contributors to the Dads on the Air program is, of course, rock and pop Peter Vandervoort, who's off in Europe at the moment interviewing various people who are connected with the fatherhood movement, and he'll be coming back with a bag full of interviews and all sorts of fascinating stuff, I have no doubt. This is a track of his album, Our Stolen Children. This is Peter Vandervoort, and this is a track called Father and Child.
For both father and child,
we try to adjust and heavy memories of fire.
It's hard to cope with a life full of stress
that's leaving us empty, our emotions a mess.
Despite our separation, our love will not die. Keep us together.
children as much as mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you.
There will come a time before we're too old.
You'll sit down together, Dad, and the truth will be told.
We'll discover the lies that have kept us apart.
No more will they try stealing what's in our hearts.
And so we will conquer betrayal and pain.
The truth we will learn and our freedom will gain.
So keep asking questions of why is it so? And sooner or later mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you. Hey, all you children, we don't see you now. We both need each other to share what we have. Fathers love their children as much as mothers do. We must fight this injustice for me and for you.
I'm doing the best I can, kids. Just remember there's always two sides to every story.
Yes, beautiful stuff. That was our very own Peter van der Voorde, who's off in Europe, as I've said before, collecting interviews, and we'll be back later on. Now, on the line, if all goes well, I have our very own Greg Andreessen, who's in Canberra attending the Men and Family Relationships Conference. Are you there, Greg?
I am, Ian. How are you going, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. Yeah, I'm here all on my own, mate. I'm feeling a little bit lonely in here in the studio.
Yeah, you're steering the ship all on your lonesome, eh?
I am indeed, and I feel a little bit lonely, and it's all a bit sad here on my own. But, mate, it's great to have you on board. How are things going down in Adelaide?
Very well. The conference started this morning, so I've really just been to the opening session, about being here for a couple of hours. It's the Men and Family Relationships National Convention today, which is all about the... there's people who work all over the country with different organisations that work with men, helping them with different aspects of their relationships. So it could be, counselling if they're having problems with their relationship. It could be people working in the new family relationship centres. Could be people working with guys who are being violent in their relationships and all sorts of different things like that. So
okay.
It's... mixed bunch. I always struggle with these conventions because the people who work there, really good hearted, and they're all about helping guys and giving them better lives and empowering them and helping them in their relationships. But underlying it all, there's often this sort of pro feminist idea that it's all about fixing bad men, and that we really got to remember that we're living in a patriarchy and.
Which needs to be dismantled,
Yeah, right. It's like, we'll sort of help this guy out and, he needs our help, but, really we have to sort of, the real issue is the patriarchy and he's really the one in power and, it's all a bit, I'm ambivalent about it because it's, they are generally doing really good work and helping guys out who are struggling, but the underlying premise is a little bit problematic.
A little bit 20th century.
Yeah, a little bit 20th century. I thought we were over that, I thought we'd move on and agree that we're in a society where men have power in some areas and women have power in others and move on from there and forget this sort of strange idea.
Us versus them. Yeah, no, it's not going to get us anywhere.
So there's some residue of the 20th century there that needs to be worked through. But, I'm going to speak up in a few of the sessions today, hopefully.
Good on you.
Challenge some of that. And later in the week, starting tomorrow, the rest of the week is the National Men's Health Conference, which is much more about men's health more broadly. So people who are working in men's health all over the country that be down here talking about different programs they've got going.
That'll be good, because I read an article out of this morning's Telegraph basically saying that men's health is falling behind. We have all sorts of problems, from erectile dysfunction to obesity to cardiovascular disease, etc., etc., etc. Men's health is something, is an issue that is underfunded compared to women's health. Not that we're saying that women's health shouldn't be as well funded as it is, but men's health issues definitely need to have more funding than they're getting specifically.
Absolutely. Look, we've had a women's health policy for decades. We've had a longitudinal study of women's health, which is a multi-million dollar study, which is actually following women over their life course and seeing what health events come up for them, and there's nothing like that for men. There's no men's health policy. There's no longitudinal study on men's health. So we simply don't have the data. We know that men's health is a lot worse than women's, but no one's out there actually doing the studies that we really need to find out what preventative measures we need to put in place to make men healthier and address some of those issues you just mentioned, that in which they're faring much worse than women. So I'm hopeful. Who knows whether it'll happen, but I'm hopeful that because this is being held in Adelaide, that the South Australian government may take the opportunity tomorrow to finally put out a South Australian state men's health policy. Who knows? If they do, we'll talk about it next week, but that would be a great...
That'd be a great start.
And that, once there's a policy in place, that may start to address some of the funding issues so that men's health gets some more funding. And of course, you know, women's health deserve every cent that they've got. We never
absolutely
take any money from that, but how about putting a little bit more into men's health, because it's really a lot worse than women's.
Well, it's neglected.
Yeah, across the board. That's right. One other exciting thing that's happening tomorrow, from a personal point of view, is I've been working with the guys out at the Men's Health Information Research Centre at the University of Western Sydney on a brand new men's health website, and we're launching that tomorrow at the conference. It's the web address is menshealthaustralia.net, so very easy to remember.
www.menshealthaustralia.net.
That's it. It's not live yet because we're launching it tomorrow, but log in, check that out later in the week, and it's a really great resource on a whole lot of information and articles there on, and it's all very well organised. So if you're interested in stuff on programs and health issues for dads, then there's a big dad section. If you're looking for stuff for just your general nutrition stuff, then that's there. Or you can name it. All the different aspects of men's health. It's really well organised, and we're doing a media monitoring role with that site, which is really great. So whenever some of these less than accurate articles come out in the press that are sort of beating up on men and, you know, saying that, you know, all men are violent or
sure,
whatever
the cliches.
The story is, then we can publicise those and pull them apart and, hopefully show up those people for what they are, which is basically...
propagandists, really.
Yeah,
they're just making propaganda.
Bringing ideology into areas where... it should be just about facts and health and helping people, you know. So it should be a really great resource. So menshealthaustralia.net, look at that later in the week, and maybe we'll talk about that on the show in coming weeks as well.
Yeah, definitely. Mate, you're doing great work down there. We really appreciate you representing Dads on the Air, and hopefully you'll find lots of very interesting people to interview.
Absolutely, yes. I've already got the... one guy lined up, and I'll
no preview of who he is, and
down here I'll sort of get some numbers and we can do some telephone interviews over the coming weeks on the program.
So that's great.
Should be great.
All right, Greg, will you enjoy your time down there, mate, and you let them know that Dad's on the Air is keeping them all honest and we're holding them to extremely high standards.
Absolutely, I will. I'll be doing that, and good luck with flying solo the rest of today's show, and I guess I won't be seeing you. I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
I'll be away next week. And,
yep, I'll be away next week.
Catch up with you in person in a couple of weeks' time back in the studio.
Okay, thanks, Greg.
All the best.
See you, mate.
Take care.
in the gloom. No happy family, no faithful wife. I looked in the mirror and I said, this is your life. Now I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. I've been cut, but I ain't bleeding. I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. My children have been taken away. I'm alone with my worst fears. Not you in the mirror. Not a pretty sight. I did my best. Maybe I wasn't always right. Now I'm alone. My family is gone. My world has caved in. And I'm all alone. Now I'm shaving. But I ain't bleeding. I'm shaving in a basin full of tears. My children have been taken away. I'm alone with my worst fears. My worst fears.
Shaving in a basin full of tears. July this year, I attended the Working with Boys, Building Fine Men conference, put on by the Family Action Centre at the University of Newcastle. And this was the fifth biennial conference over 10 years to be run by the Family Action Centre, and that makes Australia world leaders in the area of boys' education. The conference was attended by around 500 really enthusiastic teachers, school leaders, policymakers, and youth workers, all sharing their stories of what's worked for them in making the education system more friendly for our boys. One of the sessions I attended was called Bringing Fathers into the Classroom, Strategies to Help Increase Father Involvement in Schools. And it was run by John Andrianis and Dave Turnage from the Boys in Schools program, which is part of the Fathers in Communities project. Now, the project began in February 2006, and it's a two-year project being conducted by the Family Action Centre. The objectives of the project are threefold: to create stronger families through supporting men in their roles as fathers, to create a greater awareness for families and schools of the importance of the role of fathers, and also to provide guidelines and resources to assist in that work. The benefits of fathers' involvement with children in terms of social, emotional well-being include stronger attachment, leading to more stable relationships and more resilient children. Educationally, the involvement of fathers and father figures has been shown to assist in improving the academic outcomes for kids. Now, given that historically there's been little involvement by fathers in the welfare and education sectors, mainly because these areas have been unfriendly environments for men, schools have to take proactive steps to change their practices in relation to male involvement and in how they encourage that involvement. Now, I had a chat with John and Dave after their presentation, and I started off by asking John what the research tells us about the benefits of fathers' involvement with children in schools.
The research, both within Australia and from the UK, USA, all around the world, has shown us that if you have parental involvement, that's both your mother and father involved, you have a lot better outcomes both educationally and socially. Also, even emotional outcomes for your children, they're a lot more stable as they progress into adulthood.
The Fathers and Communities Project, is that the aim of it? Basically to get dads into schools, more involved in the school environment?
That is our main aim, we start with the social aspect, so get dads in an easy way, so they can come in a relaxed environment. They're not coming in because of a certain issue around their child. They're just coming in to have some breakfast, if it's a barbecue breakfast, and then to spend some time with their children in the classroom. So it's a very social sort of atmosphere, which then builds on to other things.
Can you give us a brief overview of the project? What sort of things? How have you been working with schools? You've been piloting this in a few schools in the Hunter region, isn't it?
Yeah, we've piloted in 9 schools in the last year and a half. I guess the basic rundown is we go into the schools, survey them to see what their needs are, where they feel there's any shortcomings or where we can help them along. And basically we're trying to raise their awareness of both the staff and the students and, of course, the community, and tie all that in together.
And when you go to schools, do you often get the response, well, you know, we're father friendly, you know, we've got it all sussed? And then when you probe them, maybe you actually discover there's some things that they could do to feel it more, to engage fathers better?
Yeah, we generally find that the first question is, how father friendly do you think the school is? And of course there's a great response saying yes. And then the second question is always, how many fathers do you actually have involved in the schools? And there's usually a resounding silence.
Right.
So, and this is where the awareness raising starts.
Right.
Where schools sort of go, well, look, we thought we were father friendly, so we're able to sort of give them a few pointers and some ideas and things we've learnt and trialled at other schools.
So, what are some of those little sort of simple things that schools can do that might increase the engagement of fathers?
Well, as you say, they really are very simple things. It's making the school more father friendly. And by doing that, we're just acknowledging that fathers sort of exist in the process of schooling. So we have we get schools to set up father displays in their classrooms, in the foyers, in the libraries. And all that means is the kids draw a picture of their dads or uncles or male role models, someone. They might write a story about them, a poem or something. We just simply display it up in the classroom and, as I said, around the school. So when fathers walk in and when mothers walk in, they see things to do with fathers up on the wall, they go, wow.
Another thing that teachers can do as as a small thing, is if they do see any fathers around the school, that they engage with them and spend some time getting to know the fathers of the children that they teach. Because it will give them, then give the teachers an insight into where these children come from. Because the children spend 6 hours a day at school, and then the rest of the time they're in another environment, and that's their family environment. And so if the teachers have an idea of that other environment that the children come from, they know how to work a lot better with the children when they're for that 6 hours at school.
And you find that that also works the other way, that dad sort of feels that, that teacher, she was a nice woman, you know, she's friendly, and he may be more comfortable about coming to school as well.
Yeah, it goes both ways, yeah. If the dad knows the teacher, he can actually sit at home and say, okay, Mrs. Smith, how's she going? Is everything all right at school? You know, do you need me to go up and talk to her? They've got that relationship going. So it is a partnership between the school teacher and the parents, and hopefully the fathers.
Hmm. And you were talking in your presentation about little things like communications between the school. Often if they're addressed generically to the parents rather than specifically to the father, then often it'll go to mum.
Yeah, we found that mums tend to do the majority of the work in regards to school. They're the ones that make the lunches, send them off to school, know about the excursions, read the notes, empty their bags out. So the dads tend to sort of get a bit overlooked there. Not intentionally, but I think it's just the mothers are usually the ones at home when the kids come home. So when they empty the bag, they're the ones that see the thing. So we've put a little bit more focus on making sure that there's dad is written on the newsletter. Or sending specific work home for the children to do with homework involving their dads. So we get that little bit more engagement with the children at home with their dads, so the dads do become a little bit more involved in it, and it becomes a lot more meaningful to them.
So what's been the initial results of this? You've been just doing this for 12 or 18 months now, is it?
About 18 months.
18 months. And what sort of has been the results of your work in the schools you've been trialling this with?
Well, all the schools we've been at, we've had a huge increase in the father involvement coming into the schools.
Okay, so what's a rough sort of idea of had any of the schools tried to get dads involved prior to you, and what sort of results were they having before you came along with your program?
Yeah, all the schools had tried in one way or another to get fathers involved. It generally revolved around inviting them up for a barbecue for Father's Day or something.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, that was it. So we've now said to the schools, if you want fathers up, you need to encourage them to come up. But then you need to follow up too. So we've sent surveys home so fathers can tell the schools what things they're interested in, what kind of skills and interests they have, and whether or not they're actually available to come up and help at the schools. We've been able to create databases for the schools. So the schools have access now to all the skills that the fathers do have. So then they can look at their database if they need someone to work on computers or someone to work in the garden, someone to help with reading, someone to go on excursions. It's at their fingertips on the database.
And are schools taking this up?
Have taken it up. Yeah. It's a bit of a learning process, because we have found at a couple of the schools, when we've gone in there, they've talked about something that's coming up in the next week, and we've said, have you used the database to get it? And they sort of go, hadn't thought about that one. So
right. They need a bit of encouragement, yeah.
I think it's so new to them,
right?
That there's an actual database available. They're used to sort of just sending a generic note home, which again always goes to the mums. So it's the mums that respond. It's generally the mums that are up at the schools. So they're the ones that actually front the teachers and say, do you need a hand or something? And generally there's enough help sort of given that way by the mothers just being there. So we're really targeting getting these fathers involved now.
We'll be back with more of John Andrianis and Dave Turnage after this short break.
I fought her, and I fought her. We were like two lambs at the slaughter, but neither the earth nor the wind nor the flame could tame her. Under the water was the place with Neptune's daughter. Under the water, I sought her. The light from the surface, the sea ablaze with rays. Deeper and deeper, but I could not see her. Then all at once, she appeared. Now I'm under the water with Neptune's daughter. I'm under the water, Neptune's daughter. Lost in the currents that moved around, 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 around me. Somehow she found me. I'm under the water, Neptune's daughter. We don't need air, we got everything here. The fish and the sea, they're enough for me. I'm under the water with Neptune's daughter. I'm under the water, Neptune's daughter. I'm under the water, Neptune's daughter. I'm under the water.
Talking with John Andrianis and Dave Turnage from the Fathers in Communities project.
The blurb on the conference program says your team's also conducted school-based activities specifically for fathers. Can you tell us a little about that sort of...
Well, the school-based activities we've got, again, it's to encourage fathers to come up. So we've trialled a few things and found the most successful ones are specific homework activities targeting fathers.
So the kids would go home and have an assignment. They'd sit down with their dad and they'd have a little exercise involving dad that they'd then bring back to school.
That's right, yeah. The activity is set out saying, hey, Dad, this is the activity for the week. It says what's expected and what equipment's needed, and we've tried to make it hands-on things. So it might be like build a paper bridge a metre wide to support a car. How are you going to do that? What kind of materials? And be a bit more specific with the materials. You know, they can only use 4 sheets of newspaper and some maybe some sticky tape or something. So then it's, you know, it's a bit of a fun thing. It's you know, where the dads are helping. Another really popular one was how far can you throw a balloon full of water and catch it without breaking. So again, it was a bit of measuring in there, fun for the dads. The dads are out there. Not a good winter activity, but
yeah. So it's fun for the kids, fun for the dads, but educational as well. Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. And it's getting the dads involved. You know, making them sort of more aware of the fun, because you know, a lot of dads have the negative approach to the school because unfortunately they're the last ones that are contacted when there is a problem, not so much when there's something good going on. So the next sort of step from that was to have fathers come in, and basically in the primary schools where the kids give news each week about something they've done, we're now encouraging the kids to bring their dads up for the news so their dads can talk about their job, their hobby, their interests, what they'd like to do, their experiences, or maybe talk about their culture or something like that. Mm. So again, it's getting the dads into the classrooms, showing them it's a friendly place to be, letting the kids say, wow, look, you know, dad's come up to the school, they participate. And the overwhelming response to that has been the behaviour of the students has definitely improved.
Fantastic. And how do the kids react when, I imagine some of them, maybe they might have been raised by a single mum and the teachers are all females, when there's these male role models come into the class telling their stories, how do the kids react? Do they seem to enjoy engaging with the dads?
In general, yeah, they love it. I mean, you're always going to have a couple of shy ones who sort of hold back, but part of the whole process is to raise the awareness of the children as well. So we don't just sort of throw them in with some strange men. You know, they give them that sort of the preempting that dad, you know, there's going to be a dad coming in, he's going to be talking about this, let's do some research on this topic, you know, come up with some good questions. So when dad's finished talking about whatever it is, the kids have some prepared questions already. So we can sort of involve the children who don't have the father figures available at the time to come up, but they're still doing the interacting with it. So,
right.
Yeah, I think we could pretty well say it's an overwhelming positive response.
Fantastic. Now, you also, the project also supports fathers through father-only seminars and workshops. You didn't talk much about that in your presentation. What have you done in that area?
I guess it comes more back to the community side of the project as well. But we have had transitional talks with from preschool going into kindergarten, and also with schools that they've got children in a young starters class at the school, and then they'll be transitioning into the normal school environment, kindergarten, first class, and those areas. So what we've done there is we've had transitional talks where we've had mums and dads show up, and we have a chat to them about literacy and things like that. What's expected of them at the school, and just the generic sort of information session. Then we split them up, and we have the group of dads and a group of mums, and we spend time talking to the mums about how they can encourage father involvement, and at that same time we're spending time with the dads, giving them ideas on how they can be involved with their child in a learning, educational way. And that has worked really well, and we've had a lot of positive feedback saying that they didn't know there was that expectation on them to be that involved, so that now they're involved, they can keep being involved.
So it's a big part of actually telling the dads how important it is for them to be involved in their kids. Maybe a lot of dads may feel, well, that's mum's business, and what's the value in me doing it? So if you convince them of the value to their kids of their being involved, that will really engage them. Is that
the idea? That's the idea. Yeah. Once we've got them there on their own, and we're having a little workshop with the dads, and providing them with ideas as well as giving them the reasons behind it. You know, the research that I guess we talked a little bit about earlier, that says the outcomes for your child will be a lot better in these areas. That there is pickup, and they think, well, if I do these little things with my child can be an A student, rather than maybe a B or C student that, you know, they might not have been, but they're going to give them their child that better chance just by reading to them overnight, or spending a little time not reading the newspaper by themselves, but sharing the newspaper with their child.
Right.
Yeah. We've also found with being able to talk to the mothers on their own, we've sort of been able to impress upon them that fathers actually think along different lines when it comes to educating their children. You know, fathers tend to be more risk takers, and we've been able to get the idea across that maybe mums need to step back a little bit and not be so protective of their children and let the fathers have a go, because whilst it's not the way the mum does it, it's simply a different way of doing it, it's not the wrong way of doing it. So you know, we've had a few mums sort of turn around and go, oh yeah, look, you know, dad's never worried about the way they're dressed because, you know, they're always mucking up and playing in the, you know, out the front and everything, and I'm always worried about the way that, you know, they're dressed, and I want them looking nice, and maybe I need to step back a little bit and let dad engage a bit more with them outside. And if they're a little bit scruffy when they come in, it doesn't matter because they've been engaging with their dads. So I think it's been a bit of an eye-opener for the mums too, to realise that dads are just as interested in helping their children. It's just there's a different process and there's a different relationship that's built.
And children will end up more well-rounded if they're getting their information from both genders' perspective.
Absolutely,
and,
absolutely.
And the different ways that mums and dads do things.
Yeah. Mm. So you sort of, you know, I mean, taking the really basic side, you know, sort of got the neat side from the mum and the messy side from the dad. So put them together and you get a real well-rounded child. So
right.
It's been very effective in that way, and I think... And the number of mums who said, you know what, I'm going to really try and step back a little bit, and, you know, when the little kids are climbing trees and things, and I'm going, don't do that, you'll hurt yourself, and dad's going, go on, see if you can make it up to the top. You know, there's value in both sides.
Mm, mm. And there's a middle ground there that, absolutely. You know, if it was just dad's way, maybe you might be a little dangerous. If it was just mum's way, they may be a little bit more mollycoddled, but you're finding that balance between the two is actually somewhat ideal for the
exactly
kids.
Yeah, it's a great way to be, and of course then it starts giving the dads that scope to sort of go, gee, you know, I've almost got permission from my wife to join in, or from a partner to actually, you know, get the kids messy or let them climb or spend a bit more extra time with them. And I think sometimes dads feel like they're almost getting in the way of their children.
So the more of that positive reinforcement they have, you'll have this positive spiral where they'll get engaged more, and they'll feel more welcome and reap the benefits
for themselves, and
for the kids, and for, obviously for the mum as well.
That's right. So if we can get that sort of, you know, we're sort of aiming at getting that going at home as well as at the school. So really it's all just awareness raising, and then, as you say, it's that spiral which just keeps going.
Now, one last question before we all go and have some lunch, which we're all itching for. A lot of the listeners to Dads on the Air are actually separated dads, and they're the dads who are wanting to have more access and time with their kids, but unfortunately, because of the separation or divorce process, that they're often being denied that time with their kids. Do you encourage the schools that you work with to specifically get in touch with the dads if the kids are living with mum and dad's not there? How do you target those separated dads and try and get them involved as well? Obviously, it's a difficult issue.
Yeah, it is difficult, but what we've tried to encourage at the schools, and we've had success with it, is schools making sure that there's a second report or second newsletter or information sent out to those dads who don't have access to their children all the time. That way they're aware of the fact that, you know, children are going on excursions, or they've had the circus come and visit the school, or, you know, there's been performances and things on. And that way, you know, dads feel like they are actually engaging a little bit with the school. Obviously, it's a little difficult at times to have everybody up at the school at the same time, but
right.
Without letting the dads knowing what's going on, obviously, as you said, it's very hard for them to keep involved. So the best way we've found is for schools to either email things or post things out to the dads and keep that on a regular basis. And we've encouraged schools to actually make databases with those fathers, with their addresses, so then they are sent that information either weekly, fortnightly. And again, it's something that the dads can ask for and say, we'd really like this. If it's not happening at their school, get in touch with their school and say, listen, I'd really like a copy of the newsletter sent out to me every week, or you know, once a fortnight, or however often.
All principals are very approachable like that, and they understand the situations that a lot of families are in, and will do their best if approached. So dads have to be a little bit proactive at times as well, because the principals don't often know what's going on at home. So if the dads then approach the school and say, look, I'd really like to know what's going on with the school and with my child, the school's generally quite happy to provide that information and mail it out and do that little bit extra to keep the fathers involved in their children's lives. Because they do miss out. If a father is separated from the family and not living with the kids, they do tend to miss out on a lot of that information.
Especially if, as we say, the traditional role has been that mum's done all that stuff, and so suddenly dad hasn't got mum there, you know, and so he's really out of the loop because,
absolutely, yeah. And it's a wonderful thing when the dads are getting that information, and come report time, a second copy of the report is sent out to the dads so they can see how their child's going, and they then have the opportunity to come in for interviews if that's required.
And obviously, the longer programs like yours are running, if the dads have been involved while they're together with their partner, actively with the school and with the kid, then if separation happens, the dad will then keep that
absolutely
up and won't be out of the loop as much as if he hadn't been involved in that way prior to separation.
That's right, so. Yeah. I think it's a way of sort of keeping that comfort factor going, you know, for the dads, and that's really what we're aiming at, is to get that comfort factor so dads really want to stay engaged with their children. You know, dads are so keen to be engaged with their children outside of schooling, and this is what we're trying to sort of reinforce, the fact that we really need them engaged in the schooling, because it's to their child's benefit, and of course it's to their benefit too, because they're going to see so much more progress with their children.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking part with Dads on the Air today, and wish you all the best for the rest of your program. Are you hoping it will continue after the 2 years?
We've currently been looking for more money to continue the program, so we've put in applications from various funding bodies to continue the program in a variety of ways. So maybe not exactly as it is now, but keeping the father focus and getting them engaged with their kids in a variety of settings. And they include, I guess, areas of special education and in low socioeconomic areas with schools as community centres and also through the juvenile justice system working with young fathers and correctional services working with older fathers that are actually inside and want to make contact with their kids and are looking for a parenting type program to help them with that.
Fantastic. Yeah. Well, wish you all the best and thanks so much again.
Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Empty house, empty life, no family, no wife. I can stay up all night, I can run round in the nude, I can eat steak or any other.
And that was Horizon Shine, and I've gone a little bit over time this morning, so my apologies to everybody who doesn't have time to go over. That was Dad's on the Air for the 2nd of October 2007. Hope you enjoyed the show. Not sure what's happening next week. I'm going to Darwin, so hey, one of those things. But I'm sure it'll all go well.
We're Dad's on the Air. We're here 'cause we care. We ask for